promise, we've broken down into three sections. And the first is the characteristics of the kingdom in chapter 4, verses 1 through 8. And then events that precede the kingdom, the end of chapter 4 into the first verse of chapter 1. And then finally, the coming king of the kingdom, the rest of chapter 5. So we want to begin by looking at the characteristics of the kingdom as described by Micah. And this kingdom that he's describing is the earthly, messianic, millennial reign of Christ. This is the kingdom that will be established after the end of the church age and after the 7 years of tribulation described by Daniel and the Lord Jesus. And what we want to note is that the first three verses of Micah are virtually identical to Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 through 4.
Pastor?
Yes?
Sorry to interrupt. I think your mic might be off.
Oh, okay. I'm not starting over. Okay, so we're looking at Micah chapter 4, verses 1 through 8, the characteristics of this kingdom. And in verse 1, Micah writes, "But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow into it." Wording slightly different, but it's exactly the same message in Isaiah chapter 2. And as Micah begins the fourth chapter, this passage is really a reversal of what he had predicted in the previous chapters. And for example, in Micah chapter 3 in verse 12, Micah predicted in the near future, "Therefore shall Zion for your sakes be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem shall become heaps, piles of rocks, and the mountain of the house as the high places of the forest." It'll be a pile of rocks. It'll be all overgrown like a forest instead of a field. It'll be desolate. But now in chapter 4, in the last days, so Micah was looking in the days just prior to the Babylonian invasion and prior to the Assyrian invasion and then the Babylonian invasion, they were in the near future. But in chapter 4, Micah jumps ahead into the distant future, into the millennial kingdom. And so he told them in the near future there was going to be desolation for Jerusalem. It would be just torn down. It would become a pile of rocks. But in the last days of Israel, not the last days of the church, but the last days of Israel, the tribulation period and especially the kingdom to follow, in that period of time, the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established. It'll be settled firm on the mountain, and it will be exalted above all the hills. The geography will be changed when there are great earthquakes in the tribulation period. Jerusalem will be exalted above the hills in that time frame. And the people, many people, the Gentiles, will flow into it. So what we see in Micah chapter 4 is a wonderful prediction that in spite of the horrors that will belong to Judah and to the northern tribes in the immediate future, in the distant future, God still has a wonderful program for his people. And people shall flow into Jerusalem in that day. They won't be flowing out of it, being taken away into captivity. So it's the opposite of the prediction of judgment. And then notice in verse 2, he says, "And many nations shall come and say, 'Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord and to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth out of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem.'" Now, that's a very different reaction. That's a very different attitude of the Gentiles. When Nebuchadnezzar came in, he wasn't coming into Jerusalem so the Jews could teach us of the ways of Jehovah. He wasn't coming in there so that he could walk in the paths of Jehovah and obey his law. He was coming in there to destroy. But Micah says in the future, many nations shall come, and they will come to worship. They will come to learn. They will come to, because they want to obey God and honor him. A total reversal of the judgment that had been promised. Gentile nations that invaded with great hostility will come in fear and trembling, worshiping the Lord God Jehovah and seeking to learn more of him so that they and their Gentile nations, the people, their people, can walk in obedience to God's law. And in that day, when nations are flowing into Jerusalem in the kingdom, Isaiah tells us that the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord. So Gentiles will flow into Jerusalem. They will learn the ways of the Lord. They will go back to their own nations and teach their own people so that the whole earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord. And all nations will, at least externally, submit to God. We don't live in the kingdom now. It's unimaginable that so many born-again people think that we are living in the kingdom now. It isn't anything like the kingdom. And then in Micah chapter 4 and verse 3, he says, "And he shall judge among many people and rebuke strong nations afar off. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up a sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." This verse is, again, almost identical to Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 4. And that verse is emblazoned across the UN building in New York City. It's a wonderful thought that one day all the weapons of warfare, all the tanks, all the missiles, all the jets, all the nuclear weapons will be melted down and turned into instruments of agriculture. So instead of blowing people to smithereens, those same instruments will be retooled, so to speak, for the benefit of mankind, to feed hungry people. And they'll never learn war anymore. And so this is a wonderful picture of that coming kingdom. And there will be peace, the Prince of Peace. He's going to judge among many people, and he will rebuke some of the strong nations that are afar off. Those that don't come to Jerusalem to worship, those that don't submit, will be rebuked by the Messiah in the kingdom. And remember, Jesus is going to rule, John tells us in Revelation, with an iron fist. And he will judge harshly any that dare to rebel against him in that day, even though he is the Prince of Peace. And so in those days, it will be a time of peace and not war. It will be a time of prosperity and not poverty, and no homelessness. Every man will sit under his own fig tree. People will have a place to live. They'll have their own property. They'll have plenty of food. And we won't see anything like what we see in city streets across our country today. And that day, the kingdom is going to be characterized by righteousness and justice. And why is that? Because Christ is reigning. Christ is seated on the throne. And when it says he will judge the nations, it means he will administer justice. So the Lord is going to administer justice all throughout the kingdom age. And this does not mean social justice. This is real justice, individual justice, not for a group of people, but rather each individual will be dealt righteously, fairly, and justly by the Lord, not because of what group he's in. And we read in Isaiah chapter 11 in verse 4, "But with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked." And so there is going to be the destruction of the wicked. There's going to be the implementation of justice, and righteousness shall reign in that day. And then if you notice in verses 6 through 8 in chapter 4, Micah is here describing the good shepherd reigning over his flock. And in verses 6 and 7, the picture is that of Messiah, the Messiah king, whom we know as the Lord Jesus. The Messiah shall reign as a shepherd, and he'll gather the lost sheep and bring them home. And that's how the kingdom will be characterized. And those lost sheep are described as being maimed and afflicted. And no wonder they just barely survived the 7 worst years of human history ever. And they will be brought into the kingdom. And the Lord will gather them. The believing remnant will be regathered to the land. They'll enter the kingdom. And there the good shepherd will care for them for the next 1,000 years and on into eternity after that. But this is the blessing that Micah describes. In verse 6, it says, "And in that day, saith the Lord, I will assemble her that halteth, those that are maimed, and I will gather her that is driven out and her that I have afflicted." So the promised future regathering will take place in the kingdom. And this is a theme that we see often in the Old Testament. And no, just read that verse. And in verse 8, Micah says, "And thou, O tower of the flock, the stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come, even the first dominion, the kingdom shall come to the daughter of Jerusalem." Now, sometimes shepherds made towers on the top of their hills, often temporary structures. They would make towers on the top of the hills so they could keep an eye on where their sheep were wandering around on the hillsides nearby. And here we see that Jerusalem is being described as that scene where the shepherd is elevated so he's able to see where all the sheep are wandering. And he says, "And the kingdom shall come to the daughter of Zion, even the first dominion." Now, that first dominion refers to the former dominion. In other words, God's kingdom existed in the Old Testament, and Israel rejected God being their king, and Israel wanted a man to be their king instead, and God allowed them to have a king, just like all the other nations. If they didn't want him, he would allow them to have a king like the other nations. And so, in Israel's history in the past, the kingdom ended, that theocracy. Now, the rule on earth continued, but God being their king, God ruling over them as their king, ended. And yet we see Amos predicted, we saw this some months ago in Amos chapter 9. Amos said, "In that day I will raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen." So in Israel's Old Testament history, God wanted to be their king. They didn't need an army. They didn't need forts. They didn't need any special kind of government. God was their rule. He was their all three portions of government. Every branch of government, the Lord was all they needed. They rejected that. The theocracy ended. The tabernacle of David was fallen down. But God promised Amos, and here he's promising the same thing to Micah, that unto thee it shall come, unto Jerusalem it shall come again. Even the first dominion, the tabernacle of David that has fallen down, that former dominion, that former reign, that same reign, that same kind of a reign, a literal, earthly, theocratic, physical kingdom. And that's what Amos was promised. That's what Micah was promised. And God never abandoned that promise. He always keeps his word. So that's the kind of kingdom that we expect to see one day. A literal, earthly, messianic, mediatorial kingdom with Jesus Christ ruling on earth, a man ruling on earth who happens to be God. And that will come again. And next we see there in this next section, beginning in chapter 4 and verse 12, Micah describes events that will precede the kingdom. So the kingdom is coming, but it's going to be preceded by some very serious conditions. And we read in verse 12, "But they know not the thoughts of the Lord, neither understand they his counsel, for he shall gather them as sheaves into the floor." And here, the Lord is not talking about the regathering of Israel. Rather, he's talking about the assembling together of the nations that God might beat them. They're going to be gathered as sheaves, and they're going to be threshed as wheat is threshed. They would take sticks and beat the wheat so the chaff would fall off it, and it would separate from the wheat. And God says that's what he's going to do to to the nations that were against Israel. And if you look in verses 9 through 12, all those nations that gather against Israel, God is going to destroy them. And so here he's speaking against Babylon in the near future, but it also foreshadows that distant judgment of God. And then notice in verse 12, God's response to this. "They know not the thoughts of the Lord." The nations are going to be judged by the Lord, but they have no idea what they were doing when they attacked Israel. They hated Israel. They had no idea that the Jews were God's people. They didn't understand God's counsel. They didn't understand that the blessing that God had promised all throughout the Old Testament, the blessing for the world was going to come to the world through the nation of Israel. And here, the nations were trying to destroy Israel, the source of their blessing. They had no idea what they were doing when they invaded Jerusalem and destroyed the city. And the same thing will be the case in the tribulation period as well. Those nations will be threshed, as in a threshing floor. Daniel described it this way, looking ahead to the second coming of Christ. "The stone that smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay and break them to pieces." Now, this image represented Gentile world power. And the stone from heaven refers to the Lord Jesus coming in power and great glory at his second coming to establish the kingdom. And he's going to break that image of Gentile nations. "Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken into pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain, a great kingdom, and filled the whole earth." So here Daniel and Amos and Micah are in full agreement as to how God is going to establish the kingdom. He first needs to destroy the enemies of Israel, the ungodly upon the earth. And then we see in Micah chapter 5, and by the way, Micah chapter 5 and verse 1 is the last verse in chapter 4 in the Hebrew Bible. And here Micah says, "Now gather thyself in troops, O daughter of troops. He hath laid siege against us. They shall smite the judge of Israel with a rod upon the cheek." Now in this passage, Micah speaks about how a ruler in Israel is going to be humiliated, smitten in the face. And here, Jerusalem is called the daughter of troops. And it pictures Jerusalem being invaded by Gentile nations, surrounded by them. And so here she's called the daughter of troops, just inundated by invading soldiers. And then Micah, almost sarcastically, invites the Jews to gather themselves in troops in verse 1. He's saying, okay, the battle's going to come, so get your troops together, knowing that it's going to be futile to fight against this invader, Nebuchadnezzar. And the invaders, Nebuchadnezzar, smite the ruler in Israel to humiliate him. And it's likely that he's speaking here about Zedekiah, the last ruler of Judah. Now, some think it's the Messiah, but I think it's more likely that he's talking about Zedekiah, the last king in Judah. And so we see here in verse 1 that the leader of Judah, the final leader, ruler of Judah, was unsuccessful against the invading Gentiles. And that final king of Judah was humiliated by the invaders. And so was Judah herself. And so that's the end of that section. And now the next section that we're looking at in chapter 5 begins with chapter 5 and verse 2. And here we read, and here's a verse everybody knows from the book of Micah. Maybe one of two verses that most people are familiar with. But thou, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from old, from everlasting. So immediately after predicting the humiliation and the defeat in the near future of the last leader, the last ruler in Judah, who was humiliated and defeated, then Micah begins to talk about the future ruler of Judah. And this future ruler in Judah will be victorious beyond description. And this future ruler in Judah is one who is an eternal person from everlasting to everlasting, deity. And then Micah does something that is really spectacular in the prophets. He pinpoints the location of the birth of the Messiah King. Now, all through the Old Testament, it's been getting refined and refined and narrower, those who would qualify to be the Messiah King. First of all, he had to be, the first hint was, the born of a woman, the seed of the woman. Okay, that could be anybody. But then it was narrowed down to through the seed of Abraham. And there were many seeds of Abraham, but then from that, it was narrowed down through the line of Judah. And then in Judah, through the line of David. And now, of all those born from the line of David, Micah pinpoints it to one tiny little village, an unexpected place, where the Messiah King would be born. Not Jerusalem, not some wealthy city, but some little insignificant, nothing little hick town in the hills. And that's where Messiah would be born. And so think of what he does. From the seed of the woman, just has to be human, through Abraham's seed, through Judah, through David, and now that's narrow enough, just through that line of David, but only those from the line of David that were born in Bethlehem. And so it's getting very narrow. In verse 3, we read, therefore will he give them up until the time that she which travaileth hath brought forth, then the remnant of his brethren shall return unto the children of Israel. Here, Micah speaks of a pregnant woman that will give birth. And this is not a reference to Mary giving birth to Jesus, but rather to Israel in the future being regathered and a nation being born. And so here, Micah is stating that even though that nation was destroyed, it's going to be born again in the future. It will be like a birth. And then we see between Micah chapter 5, verses 2 and 3, Micah presents before us something that we've seen several times in the Old Testament, where a prophet puts two pieces of history together, and it seems like they are happening at the same time or simultaneously, but there's a great gap of time in between, just like we see in Isaiah chapter 9. a son is born, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. It seemed like they were going to happen simultaneously, but there was a big gap. And there's a big gap here between the birth of Messiah in Bethlehem in verse 2, and then when the nation is born in verse 3. And that takes place at the second coming of Christ. So we have the first coming of Christ, his first advent and his birth in verse 2, and then mention is made of his second coming and when Israel is born as a nation, installed as a nation again. And then we have a list, and we'll just have to go through this very quickly. Micah lists several things that the Messiah will accomplish. And he shall stand and feed in the strength of the Lord, and the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall abide. For now shall he be great unto the ends of the earth. And so again, the Messiah King is pictured as a good shepherd who will feed his people. And the word feed means to shepherd. It implies feeding. It implies shepherding, herding them, caring for them, everything that a shepherd does for a sheep is implied in this term. And so that's the role of the Messiah. And we see also in verses 5 through 9 that Messiah will defeat their enemies. In verses 5 through 6, he's going to bring peace, especially to peace between Israel and her enemies, especially the enemy of Assyria. And then in verse 7, there's another spectacular verse where God describes the future reaction the world has to Israel. We know the reaction that they have today. They're trying to wipe her off the face of the earth, with anti-Semitism growing in Europe, much like was the case at the beginning of the last century. But there's coming a day when the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many people. Israel will still be in the same place, the navel of the earth, the center of all the nations, so to speak, from God's perspective. They'll be right there in the midst of many people, and they will be as a dew from the Lord. Refreshing, and that's the idea, as showers upon the grass. And so here we have a prediction that when Messiah comes at his second coming, when the kingdom is established, Israel will be raised up right in the midst of all the nations that previously hated Israel and wanted to wipe her off the map. And suddenly the nations realize that they are being blessed because of Israel. And she is like dew, a refreshing dew on the grass, a shower on dry, parched soil. She'll be a blessing throughout the kingdom age as well. And then we see in verses 10 through 15, the chapter ends with God dealing harshly in the kingdom. Remember, he's going to establish a kingdom of peace and righteousness, but that first has to be established. And so Micah says in verse 10 that when Christ returns, he's going to cut off and destroy the armies of the world. Verse 11, he's going to destroy all opposing cities and all their strongholds that oppose him. In verse 12, he's going to cut off all the witchcrafts and soothsayers in the world. Verse 13, he's going to cut off all the false prophets. Verse 14, he's going to cut off all the images and idols. Verse 15, he's going to execute vengeance in anger and fury upon the heathen, such as they have not heard. An incredible amount of divine wrath will fall upon the nations. And you might say, well, what place has that in the kingdom? Well, Messiah will accomplish all of this because if you want to establish a kingdom of righteousness, you have to get rid of the unrighteousness. If you want to establish a kingdom of peace, you have to deal with those that oppose peace. And so in order to establish the kingdom, Micah tells us that the Messiah King is going to do it with great harshness, just like John tells us in the book of Revelation. So that's the end of that section of the book of Micah, and we will continue the next final two chapters next time, Lord willing.